I have a hangover, so I'm taking the unusual step of just keeping as quiet as possible, because I just think that's sensible, and drinking lots of water. A top tip is having a Barocca before you go to bed, whenever bedtime is, when you've been drinking. So last night was the UK embassy event in Stockholm, and my taxi took me from my hotel through some gorgeous bits of Stockholm. I mean, all of it is gorgeous, really, but this was where the embassies are, is just breathtaking. And stepped into a very large house. It was the ambassador's residence, don't you know? And wow, he's got some great furniture in there. Certainly no sofas from Multiorc or Sofa Workshop. Goodness me, no. It was a bit weird. It was a bit weird wandering around somebody else's house, really. Inevitably, there were some people with accreditation badges hanging around the neck. I imagine they haven't had time to listen to the podcast, but I'm sure as soon as they do, they will change their behaviour.
It's absolutely wonderful to have you guys here today, Joe and Jake, in our house, as we would say. Eurovision, this year, 60th anniversary, so it's a big year, and it's 19 years since we won. The last was, do you remember the fantastic Katrina and the Waves in 1997? And I've been following Eurovision TV, so I know how you're doing. I know your rehearsals went really well. I know the bookies are short at the odds. And I also really know that the French are odds on to win. And we cannot be weak.
I just want to say, before we get going, just a massive thank you to the ambassador for having us here in this beautiful place. It's amazing, and we're just really happy to be here. Also, just a quick note, seeing as we're all in Stockholm, you know, you guys can vote for us and stuff. Just want to say thank you so much, and this is our song, We're Not Alone.
I love those events, actually, and the reason I love those events is because it's not full of bombast, it's not bright and shiny, it's just rather pleasant, and the ambassador's residence has a balcony overlooking the most stunning scene: water, trees, hills, boats, God, it's everything. The reason I really like them is because, actually, from my perspective, I love the interactions that you can have at those kind of events. There are no expectations on either party's side. But this is not the beginning of a beautiful friendship. This is just quite light, superficial conversation, which one should engage in and be present in, because you never know what you might pick up. And you know, the people that I spoke to were lovely, not least the Swedish couple. She was a project manager. He was a product manager at Miele.
No, but really, what do you do?
I work at Miele.
Miele. Okay, right. Sorry, I didn't react to you in that way.
No.
Oh, Miele.
Well, I understand.
Right. And what do you do there?
I'm a product manager.
Meaning?
Working with the products, I did decide what products that Germany makes that will sell in Sweden. I do the prices of them, and you know, yeah.
So you decide what German products will be sold in Sweden?
Yeah, I decide what German products that will sell in Sweden.
That sounds quite powerful, because Miele is quite a powerful company, isn't it? And I imagine quite supportive as well, as in it's a good organisation to work for.
Yeah,
of course. Why are you laughing that way? Obviously, I've touched a nerve.
He's very proud working for Miele, I must say.
Well, and rightly so.
It's a very nice,
highly sought after brand.
Yes, it is. So what are you doing?
And later on, they recommended, I asked them for some recommendations for restaurants. I was quite specific in asking them for recommendations, and he went and retrieved his pen from the inside of his jacket. That was a special moment.
I think I want to step onto an island. I want to step onto an island.
Okay.
Really?
Yes.
And I'm prepared to eat on a boat.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So does that narrow? And I need to be back by 5.
Yes. Sand. Sand is very nice. Sand ham. Sand ham.
Sand.
Sand ham.
How is that spelled? I'm sorry.
S-A-N-D. I will write it for you.
No, S A N D.
Yes. You will write it.
Okay. Right. Oh, look, he's in a branded pen.
He's so proud now. You see that?
Oh, he's so on message.
He's got his card now.
We don't have business cards at the BBC. We don't have any money.
Really?
No.
I don't believe you.
Oh, the pen doesn't work.
Okay.
How about mean equality, yeah?
Yeah, hey, what happened there? I love that kind of conversation. It's just really straightforward. It has a finite end. There are no expectations. There's no commitment. And what else? You don't have to go too deep. And actually, you can just wing it. That's the thing about those conversations. You can just wing it. And it's because of them that I don't want anybody else around me. You know, I want to attend those kind of events on my own. Because once you've got over that rather uncomfortable moment of, hello, hi, I'm on my own, people are willing to talk. They are willing to talk. And what I notice is that if you try to have those kind of conversations with people in the UK, they kind of give you the brush off, even at formal events. I go to quite a few sort of press events for classical music concerts, and generally speaking, the same people do turn up at those events. There's a bit of a circuit, if you like, and so people sort of keep themselves, which I also like. I much prefer that. But sometimes when you go abroad, you notice that people are more open and they're more willing and keen to talk. And all you have to do is just say, you know, make the first move and go, hello, hi, who are you? Why are you here? What on earth are you wearing? And the conversation's got underway. It's great. It's lovely. It's lovely. But there was a tinge. There was a little tinge. Isn't there always? Isn't there always a little tinge? And that tinge was, is there are lots of people are sort of vaguely recognised. A lot of people there with their cameras and sort of wanted to capture the event. And I understand why, and to a certain extent, that's what that event is for. It's a PR opportunity. But I heard quite a lot of people talking about how noisy bikes. Ooh, it was me. Okay, all right. I heard quite a lot of people talking about what party they were going on to next. Well, are you going to this party? Oh, well, I'm going to this one. And then after that, I'm going to go on to this one. And, oh, God. There was a bit of me that thought, oh, should I be going to that? Really? Should I? I mean, I should have connections. I should have a full dance card, shouldn't I? Isn't that what happened? But I haven't. And I was a bit sad about that. Just a little. It's the pressure. It's peer pressure. What I've ended up doing, in fact, is walking back. I've no idea where I'm going. I mean, you know, I could rely on Google Maps, although the last time I did that, God, a 7-minute walk took me half an hour. So I thought I won't even bother with Google Maps this time. I ended up walking down by the water, seeing all the lovely boats.
and just being in awe of the ravishing sight. Every time you turned around, it was just another ravishing sight. It's gorgeous here, really. Of course, the other distinct advantage of being on your own and not being attached to any other people who want to go to other parties is that you're a free agent. You can change your mind at the last minute, like I have. I figured, seeing as I'm out, why not check out the Euro Club? I found the Euro Club. It's basically a massive white box on the edge of the water. It's not terribly inviting. It's really odd. Why would anybody want to make a point of coming here? I don't understand. Well, other than for research purposes, obviously. It's now 10 to 9. I wonder whether I'm here too early. Thing about being here, obviously I'm here on my own, so it's not like I've got... It doesn't really feel as though I have a reason to be here. So I sort of perched at a seat overlooking the water, which is very nice. And the really strange thing is that this feels a world away from the reason that I came out here. That doesn't mean that this is wrong, or this isn't right, or this is not the purest experience, but it is entirely different from my experience and perception of the event. And it's just basically a bar. That's all it is. It's just a bar. And actually, it's a bar that requires specific membership. Either you are a member of a fan club, or you're a member of the press, or a member of a delegation. They are the reasons why you would come. And that actually segregates people, because there's a lot of my friends who are coming, a few of my friends who are coming, who don't have any kind of accreditation, which means they can't get in here. And they're itching to get in here. If only they knew what it was like, then they'd realise that actually, we'll just go and find another bar. But it's really strange. It's another really fascinating aspect of the event. And it's also the only kind of event, it's the only kind of holiday that I would be prepared to share with other people other than my partner. And that is because if you come to it, you are coming for one particular event. And it's an event that you want to share with other people. That is quite amazing. I don't know how that happened or when that happened or who was responsible for it turning into that, but that's something really quite special. So anyway, you will recall that I was somewhat sniffy about the idea of going to a party, and this generally happens when I know that lots of other people are talking about going to the party and I haven't had an invite. That's generally when I get a little bit sniffy. So you will surely be surprised, as I was last night, to find myself at the Israeli party. There was nobody on the door checking tickets. There were no invitations. It appeared the term party was very, very loosely applied. It was just another room in the tent, with a bar, this time with some food and a stage and lots of people. That Israeli party reminded me of another aspect of Eurovision, which I have hitherto forgotten. And it goes something like this, that you know, they had singers come on stage, they had Nicky Byrne from Ireland sing his song. I think there was the lady from Albania. I think, too, there was a lady from Bulgaria. I can't remember their names. I'm sorry. But at one point, they started singing previous Israeli winners or previous Israeli entries. Yeah, I think the one that really got people up and moving was an entry. I hadn't even won. But I noticed that whenever there was an Israeli entry played or sung, the crowd went wild. There was a real surge in energy, a sort of an unbridled enthusiasm mixed with a sense of pride in one's country. This song was almost like a postcard from their country, which they were now hearing, and it stirred up all sorts of emotions for them, and they were really excited to hear it. It's quite an incredible space to be in when there's a optimum number of Eurovision fans and general, you know, Eurovision lovers, if you like. And it's also alien to the UK experience. I cannot imagine for a moment that people would be so stirred up by a UK song that they would bounce up and down with great pride, you know, when they hear Making Your Mind Up or Save All Your Kisses For Me. I mean, I just don't think people would do that in the UK. It is something which every other country seems to get apart from us. And like I say, it's just an amazing thing to be a part of. So much warmth, so much energy, so much enthusiasm. And also so much lager. I didn't get to bed until 3:30. So considering that I was dead set against going to the party, I am myself surprised that I was out so late. It's very unlike me. That was all written and presented by me, John Jacob, and it was a thoroughly good production for ESC Insight. If you want to get in contact, tweet me at thoroughlygood, because I am. If you want to moan about me, then tweet at ESC Insight.